the podcast studio. This is From Long Distance Marriage with Rich and Andrea. We're a once long distance couple who closed 5,000 miles of distance and are now happily married.
We talk long distance, marriage, and relationships.
Hi everyone, we're back for episode 54 of From Long Distance to Marriage, and this week we have some more special guests for you guys. We're joined in this episode by Marcus and Ashley, who run Our Peaceful Family.
.com.
It's a website. So we talked to them about the first year of marriage, and that's something that they really specialize in. And it's something that Rich and I have made kind of very clear that we really struggled in our first year of marriage. We had some unique challenges. So did this couple that we speak to.
They had particularly unique challenges.
They had particularly unique and difficult challenges. So yeah, if you've been married even for a couple of years, you're in the first year, you're about to get married, or even considering proposing, getting engaged, we definitely think this is an awesome episode for you guys to listen to, kind of a survival guide to the first year.
Yeah, and stick around at the end and we will have all the resources from them.
Yep, enjoy.
We're here with Marcus and Ashley from Our Peaceful Family, who are this week's guests. So, hi guys.
Hi.
Hi, Rich and Andrea.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us. So, like I said, you got Our Peaceful Family as your website. So do you want to give our listeners a bit of a intro to what you do and who you are?
Yes, sure. So we are married couple, obviously. On our website, what we do is we help newlyweds adjust to married life by sharing our own basis of marriage journey and other things that we are learning as a married couple. Currently, we've been married for about 9 years, and so everything that we write about evolves as we grow as a couple. So when we started the blog, our writing was focused on helping newlyweds specifically. But as we've grown over the years, we've added a lot of things, and we've kind of added more diverse things. So we cover topics that relate to couples who've been married for more than just the first year.
That basically focus on building that strong foundation or kind of maintaining it.
So what gave you the idea for focusing on newlyweds?
Well, we were married for a few months and we were going through a lot of different struggles, and there wasn't really a resource out there that kind of included everything we were looking for. There was a lot of older research and it was just marriage in general, but nothing was specific towards newlyweds. And we didn't really have a lot of people in our community that we could reach out to for help and guidance. And so we kind of just started by just sharing, hey, we went through this struggle and this is what we did and this worked for us. Maybe it'll work for you too.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I think sometimes people are afraid to even admit that, you know, it can be difficult for newlyweds. It's supposed to be the honeymoon period. Everything should come to you really easily. But in fact, I think most people find that that's not the case at all. And it's really, really hard.
Yeah, we struggled with it because I think we didn't really have any expectations. But looking back on it and talking to other people who are about to be newlyweds, perhaps there may be an expectation that if the relationship's good beforehand, kind of marriage is just a continuation. But we found it just brought a number of changes, certainly when we lived together. We'd lived together but in family homes, and living together on our own with no one else there was a huge change for us. And yeah, we really had to navigate quite a lot of arguments and figuring out how we wanted that house to run, and you know, what our roles individually were. And I think the focus on newlyweds is really interesting to me because I agree with you, there still doesn't seem to be much resource out there for getting started on the right foot.
Yeah, and the other thing also is when you start a marriage, it's like starting everything. Like that first year pretty much sets the tone for the rest of your marriage. So if there are issues that you don't deal with it in that first year or the first few years, those issues will come up maybe year 7, year 8, year 10 or 20, and then it will be difficult at that time to change them or to be like, hey, this thing I've been doing for the past 20 years has been bothering me, but now is the time that I think it should change, and that's not going to really work out well.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, he will always catch up with you.
I know we're only a few minutes into this conversation, but if anyone's listening to this and they're maybe on year 2 or 3 of their marriage, do you guys is your website still a good resource for them? Are they going to feel like they've missed the boat on what you've got to offer, or can they still come and talk to you?
Oh, no, absolutely. It's interesting because the most responses we get are people who have been married for anywhere between, 5 and 25 years.
Okay.
So
maybe those people where things are starting to catch up with them when they didn't talk about things and deal with things in the first year then, do you think?
Yeah, I think just people are like, you know what, I'm really not happy in my relationship right now, and we really need help in this one area. And they may come to our website looking for help with communication, and then they discover, hey, you know what, this is also not so great. Maybe I should read this and check this out. So it's never too late to better yourself and to better your relationship.
Bettering yourself.
It just usually is harder for people who have been doing the same thing for 10, 20 years to be like, you know what, let's change things. And the other person's like, why? We've been doing it this long, this way, and it works fine for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you find that a lot where it's driven by one person and the other one doesn't see the need for it or is more skeptical about it?
Yes. Specifically with couples who have been together longer and one of them is seeking to start a change.
That's unfortunate, but I think, yeah, it can be quite hard, especially if one person's seeking it out and then can mention, oh, you know, I really want to try this. It can feel a bit out of left field probably to the other person. But back to kind of the first year. So I was having, as I said, I kind of had a look through a section of your website where you guys are actually really, really open and honest and vulnerable about what you both kind of learned about yourselves and what you went through as a couple. And as someone who immigrated, I was really kind of startled to see the difficulties that Marcus had in the first year. Are you guys happy to talk a little bit more about, in terms of immigration, what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I came here as a student on a student visa, and then when it was time for me to switch my status to permanent residence, because I left school to transfer to different school, and then I got out of status. And in the U.S., once you go out of status, you're considered an undocumented immigrant. And so when we're doing, when I didn't know that applying for a driver's license could be a trigger for the immigration services to deport me. I didn't know that. And so.
So this is in the U.S., right?
This is in the U.S., yes. So I applied over there at the DMV, and then they called me to come in and get my license. And when I went in there, there was, I think it was ICE agents ready to pick me up. So they picked me up and then they took me to their offices. And then they arranged for me to be put in a jail. So I was in jail for, I think, about 2 or 3 days. Yeah. And that was in 2011. That was when that happened. So like it was pretty much in the first 6 months of our marriage. And that put a lot of strain on us and made us to set back some of our goals.
Yeah, so he wasn't allowed to work.
Yeah.
18 months after that, we had to pay lawyers and court fees and things like that. So it was all on me to work 3 part-time jobs while going to school and, you know, manage not to fall apart.
Yeah. It wasn't easy. It was a very, very, very difficult and stressful time for us, but we worked through it and now things are better. The other thing that we struggled a lot with during that first year was with communicating with each other.
Because we're from 2 very different cultures.
Yes. So merging, being able to, even if you're from the same culture, it's just being able to communicate with each other is difficult. And then adding the different cultural background makes it very difficult. So sometimes there are some words that she will use and I'll find to me offensive, but to her it's just another word that you use every
day. Silly. I called him silly once. I was like, you're so silly. We were joking around. He was like, what did you just call me?
Yeah. And
because it's like an insult in his country.
So it's a bit more of a hurtful word than in your culture, Marcus. Is that, yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we had similar. I mean, even
a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. But I called you a country bumpkin once.
A country bumpkin, yeah.
That wasn't what I was
saying. That was a little bit less, but no, I mean, that's crazy that you guys had to go through all that. I mean, people talk about a rough first year and it usually is a little bit more like, oh, we just can't communicate or we're not on the same page with things. But I mean, to throw in, you know, all those difficulties with immigration and then the financial strain that put on you both.
That first year would have been more challenging than most.
Most people's entire marriages, probably.
So how did you guys meet?
We both worked at the same restaurant, but opposite shifts. I had seen him once, and I was like, oh, hi, how you doing? He totally ignored me.
Yeah.
He was like, just leave me alone. Like, he was very, like, standoffish. And I was like, okay. So we had a mutual friend, and he reached out to me on Facebook.
Yeah.
And we got chatting, and then
that was texting. The beginning.
Yeah. And then we decided to meet up, and then that was it. We were together.
Pretty easy.
And this when you were on a student visa, Marcus?
Then I was out of status. When we met, I was out of status.
Okay.
Right, okay.
So I think the big question is, what is it about the first year of marriage that makes it so hard? What do you guys think?
I think, you know, just moving from the I to the we, you're moving in, if you haven't already, with a person, even if you've been living together, which we were before we got married. It's different when you sign those papers and you become married, because even though you may not be from two different cultures, each family is a culture in itself. So you're both with these role expectations. And I mean, just this thing, you know, you view the world differently. So you're coming together and you're meshing that and you're trying to take out what you don't need and keep what is most important to you and just mesh that with another person.
Yeah. Then creating something new. And, It's all about the change. So if you're not open-minded and ready for the change, the first year is very, very difficult. But if you are open-minded and you know, okay, you're going to go through this transition period and you're going to work out things and you get to a point where you'll be comfortable with, okay, now we are really happy with the new normal or the new things that we are doing together as a couple. We are looking forward to the future. That really makes it a whole lot more easier.
Yeah, I think probably today a lot of couples do live together before they get married. I think that's kind of the norm now, or at least it's not unusual. But you're right, Ashley. There is something about it does all change once you sign those papers. Everything becomes a bit more real and serious. And I know for us, the first year was really, really hard because I immigrated to England to be here just for the sole reason of being with Rich. It wasn't for a job or for study. It was purely, to be able to close the distance and make our relationship permanent and real. And so I had obviously personal challenges with that. You know, I left home for the first time and I left home in quite a big way. We were both then living on our own. I mean, Rich, you know, lived with friends and stuff throughout university. But it was the first time we were running a household. And like you said, what you said was each family is a culture. It's so true. So I had these ideas of how I would run a household. And yet he had these ideas of how his mother ran a household and how it should be done, how it shouldn't be done. And suddenly we just didn't agree on anything. And we were so shocked about it because before that, everything had really been so easy in terms of things that we wanted and thought aligning. And yeah, suddenly it just didn't anymore. So it was really a battle finding ourselves as individuals, as like a married, like my identity is Andrea, the wife, and Rich finding his identity as Rich, the husband, and then finding out who we were together as husband and wife. Did you guys kind of feel any of that? I mean, I know you had a lot of other stuff going on as well, but just on that side of things.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I definitely went through the same thing.
Yeah, it was. It's just like you're saying, like just changing the mindset, you know, going from, okay, single life, or even when you're dating, like you could decide what you're going to wear, where you're going to eat, where you're going to sleep, what time you're going to go to bed, all that kind of stuff. But now that you're married, you have to consider your spouse's viewpoint also. Maybe you going to bed at 9 o'clock p.m. It's not going to work with him or her going to bed at 12 midnight or 1 a.m. in the morning. So being able to work out of that is, you know, really essential.
Yeah, but also just discovering who I was as a wife versus just me as a woman. And then eventually it became me as a mother, too. I went through the same thing. And it's just finding, okay, what parts of me do I want to bring into this? Which parts of me need to be bettered? And just, yeah, finding that new identity, creating that new identity, really. And you don't want to lose yourself and just morph into what you think your partner needs. So you need to decide, you know, you need to go equal partners. We're huge on this message that the man is not the head of the household, meaning he's not making the decisions. And if you don't agree, we're very big on it's an equal partnership and we both have a say. And so coming in and deciding our roles as husband and wife, that played a big role in it.
Yeah. And on your website, you say that you make the point about fighting over really dumb things like where to keep the shoes and what TV shows to watch. And it kind of reminds me, we had similar.
About the towels.
Our infamous towel argument.
About stupid argument about when and how frequently, or when the towels should be washed and where they should be stored.
Well,
we don't need to get into it.
We'll tell the story.
We don't need to tell the story.
Well, we have to now. So, I washed my hands and there was no towel. So I went to the airing cupboard and there was no towel there. And I can't remember the whole conversation.
Basically, I was washing all the towels.
All the towels have been washed at the same time. And
you lost it over towels.
I was like, well, why isn't one set in the wash and the other set is in use? And that's kind of like just become our that argument basically sums up that period of our marriage, I think, of just we wouldn't have the argument nowadays. It may be a conversation, but it wouldn't be an argument. And I think
we have a lot more towels now.
We have a lot more towels.
That's fixed it.
But no, I think the point is you have these arguments over dumb stuff that if you mention that to anyone before they got married, they would shrug it off and say, oh, you know, that's so trivial, you know. And then you look back on it and it is trivial, but in the moment it's really serious. So have you got anything to say about, you know, about that, the dumb arguments, where they come from or how you guys got past that?
You have to keep perspective during
them.
Yeah,
absolutely, yeah.
So along the lines of the laundry, like, I like to fold my laundry once it's done and then put them away. I actually prefer to just have them in the basket and then she can just pick one up whenever she wants and she'll wear it and then she's good to go.
Well, that's how it was, like, before college.
Yeah, so
okay.
So when we got married, it was a little difficult for me to adjust to that. Be like, okay, that is her way, that's how she likes it, and I like it a different way, and not get angry about it. And so we just talked through it, and I was like, okay, is this something that is really, really important? Is this something that is a make or break for us? And I was like, it's not really anything that's going to matter in like 2 days or 3 days or years down the road. So I just let it go. I was like, okay, this is how she does it her way. This is how I do my way. We try to work it out together whereby we're going to do it this way. So, for example, when we get our laundry done, they're in a basket, we fold them, and then she gets to put hers away if she wants. If she wants to keep them in the basket, she gets to do it, and I put mine away.
I think the closet was our biggest point of contention.
Yeah, closet. Yeah.
I'm noticing a theme here, isn't
it? Yeah, there is something about clothing and
I also really like this, because we don't, I mean, this isn't a problem for us, but certainly never occurred to me that I'll take my clothes out of the laundry basket the way while yours stay in there. Like, for us, it's kind of all or nothing, isn't it? All the clothes are in the basket or all the clothes are put away, and I quite like that idea.
I'm notoriously bad. I mean, I always do the laundry and there's always clean clothes, but they rarely get put away. So,
yeah.
Yeah, you're welcome to start doing that.
I think I will. Because, I mean, I like mine. Well, my big bugbear with the laundry, I know this is riveting listening for anyone, but my bugbear
is marriage.
If I have to find, like, socks, because obviously you need two of them and they're tiny. Like, finding a pair of jeans, finding a shirt, it's a bigger item of clothing, but I can find one sock and then I have to go hunting through this leaning tower of a laundry for another one. So I think we might implement this idea.
Or you could just do your fair share of putting it all away. I mean, that could also work.
Well, I did do that. And then you told me I did it.
No,
wrong,
you just,
so I never
no,
did it
I didn't.
Soon.
That's not true. He's lying. but yeah, there is something about these little things that feel really, really big, especially I think it's really common when you're married or newlyweds early in your marriage. I think we've been married for 8 years and you guys have been married for 9. Is that right?
Yeah.
So we're in a pretty similar place, I think. And so very rarely do we have something like that now, like something really little that seems huge. I mean, that doesn't really happen anymore. But in the beginning, it can be a big problem. And I think, Ashley, you know, you said like when you were kind of figuring out your identity as Ashley the wife, it was figuring out what you needed to be better at and things like that. And that's something that I think people can really struggle with. Marriage, and especially the early days when you're finding your groove, can be extremely humbling because you have to kind of look at yourself and some of your selfish traits that at face value and think about, okay, well, that worked when you know, I was living at home or single, living on my own, or just had roommates and friends. But now suddenly everything I do, every decision I make, every action I take is affecting this person who I love. And like you were saying, Marcus, like even just bedtimes, like everything about your life has the potential to change. How do you advise people to deal with kind of that evolvement of yourself when you're early in your marriage?
You know what? One of the most telling things for me was when we had an argument, and instead of elevating it to the point where it would be shouting and name calling, which is what I, from my background, expected an argument to include, Marcus said, "I need to stop. I need to walk away right now before I say something that we'll both regret."
Mm-hmm.
Walked away. And I was like, wait a minute, what? We don't have to fight this way? And it's like, for a lot of people, they're going to be like, well, yeah, duh. But to me, it was like a complete, like, wow, my mind was blown. And just to be open to your partner and learning from them, but also trying to see things through their point of view. So empathetic listening is huge. It's just one way to do that.
Yeah. I think the other way, similar to that, would be thinking about what other things mean to you. So, for example, if you learn certain things from your parents, or you're picking up from your parents, or wherever you were raised, something that, like, is ingrained in you. You want to say something?
Well, just, like, asking yourself, why is this important to me?
Yeah, just asking yourself, why is this thing really important to me? Like, and then digging through the beliefs or your past to see if there's a pattern. Because sometimes there are some things that you do them because of the environments that you're raised in. And it might not be right or wrong, but you do them simply because that's how you've been doing it. But there could be a different way that your spouse or your partner could show you that will help you either stop doing that or do that in a better way or in a different way that will help you guys to be able to communicate better and live together as a couple peacefully.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I mean, there's no reason you have to carry on, you know, I mean, maybe certainly some of the fundamental things in terms of beliefs and things like that, but just in terms of how you do things and how maybe your house is run, there's no way you can't find a way together that works better
especially if you come from family, they got divorced or whatever. If that marriage didn't work out, then I'd suggest you should definitely be evaluating the lessons you took from that marriage and see what could be changed for improvement.
Yeah, and I think, like, I know for me, you know, Marcus, and you were saying, like, thinking about what's important about this. And I remember a lot of those early arguments, and even now the rare argument that we do have, that it gets beyond just, no, I don't agree with you, and we figure it out. But if it gets a bit more elevated, I don't know if it's pride necessarily, but whatever it is we're fighting about, whether it's the towels or something I forgot or a conversation we're having, it's not actually what we're talking about that's the problem. It kind of goes back to a root of, and this is a me thing, and I think it's probably quite common with lots of people. It's the fact that they're disagreeing with me at all and making me feel insecure, and that, like, what I'm doing isn't good enough. Do you think that that's common along pretty much all marriages? Is that something that people talk about a lot with you?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, I can identify that with myself. Usually if we get in an argument, I'm the one who gets frustrated and angry the easiest. So what I do is, when I feel myself getting that way, I know that I'm just arguing and we're not really going to get anywhere, I just walk away. And I don't recommend you do that without letting your partner know ahead of time, hey, if I walk away from you when we're fighting, I'm not ignoring you. I'm trying to cool off. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, usually it's like, hey, can you give me a minute? Just pause this. And let me have a few minutes. Usually when I'm so angry, I can't even say those words to Marcus. And I'm like, I just walk away. And he knows that I'm not abandoning him, and I'm not just walking away from the conversation, that I'm going to return when I'm calmed down. And that gives me the time to self-reflect. Like, self-reflection is such a huge part of marriage. And if you're not ready and willing to do the work on yourself, then marriage is not for you.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
So what about in couples where either or both of them aren't good at communicating? For, you know, I suppose there are some people who feel too vulnerable opening up, or you've got some people who don't see the point of it, or maybe, you know, whatever the reason is, I guess, if you've just got people who are reluctant to communicate, how does their partner progress with that? You know, in the context of an argument and the resolution of that argument, if they're really just talking to a brick wall, how do you advise they do that?
First and foremost, like before you talk to your spouse, the best thing is to get their attention and make sure you're getting their full attention. Because if the person is not giving their full attention, they won't be in a better place or a good place to understand or even hear what you're telling them. And that could be literally like the main reason why you are arguing, because somebody's not paying attention. And so if that one is out of the way, but you have each other's attention, but you're still not making ahead, then you're not making progress, then you should just take a break from it. Maybe it's a couple hours, maybe it's the next day. And then you come back to it with fresh minds. And then whilst you're away from it, just think through the whole event and what you said and what your partner said, and then try to analyze it and see what is going on. What can you guys do to come to a resolution? Like, because you are a team, and if you're a team and you're working towards the same goals, then you should be thinking about the best thing that could come out of whatever event or situation that you were going through. Do you have anything to add?
I mean, did you want to know what we think when somebody's exhausted all those options, or did you want us to list a few different things that are options?
You know, I'm going to say let's go with both, if you're happy with that. I think if there's people listening who want one and we say the other one, I don't want them to feel left out. So if we can do both, that'd be great.
Okay, so, I mean...
So in our first year of marriage, we had a lot of communication issues, and that was the main thing for us. And so we came out with a 7-step strategy that we used to communicate. And that has been really, really helpful for us. It helped us to eliminate a lot of distractions and reduce the amount of arguments that we have. And so Ashley can tell you guys what those 7 steps are.
Well, no, they're talking about, that's not the question.
Oh, okay. All right.
So Marcus was a brick wall, and I was trying to communicate to him my feelings about something, and he was just getting totally defensive and shutting me down. After I had exhausted the 7 steps we recommend, a myriad of other different communication techniques, I would come to him and I would say, listen, I am not happy in our relationship like this. If you can't listen to me and let me express my feelings to you and try to hear me like I listen to you, then I think we're going to have a problem. I can't continue our marriage this way. I really want to stay married to you, but I need you to help me and meet me partway here. And we've used this conversation specifically less than 5 times in our marriage, but we've had to get to that point where we're like, I'm not going to be happy if our marriage continues this way. I don't want to live an unhappy marriage. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with standing up for your needs in the marriage. Obviously, it becomes not a great thing if you're using this like an ultimatum all the time. But to stand up for your needs is different.
Yeah, I agree with her. And because like some things that are like really important, for example, if like sexual intimacy is something that is important to you, then and your spouse is not willing to talk about it or even have a conversation about it, then that is a big issue that you need to talk about. If you need to seek outside help, then you seek the outside help. But if it's something like going to buy, you know, the latest iPhone or a new car, that is not a need. That is a want. That it shouldn't be an issue that you should be like, hey, if you don't let me buy this car, I'm leaving you.
That tells you a lot about a person if they say that. So yeah.
Yeah.
I think something that we struggled with or like the first few years, and again, like because we don't argue as much, we've really learned how to talk to each other. We know each other a lot better. But earlier on, I think it was this, you know, you never want to fight. You never get to that stage because it's where you want to be in that place of being angry and unhappy with each other and arguing. But you do. It happens inevitably. It's going to happen at times. And you obviously wouldn't get to that point if you didn't really believe that whatever it was, you know, you were saying on your side was right. And they wouldn't not back down if they didn't believe that, you know, what they were saying was right. And that they, you know, there was value in what they were saying. And I know that I got to a point where I felt like I actually had to stop myself, you know, between, you know, a period of maybe where we had some arguments and be like, am I actually crazy? Because I can't always be wrong. My view can't always be wrong, but then neither can his. I mean, what would you recommend to people that are like in that spot where they just feel like, I'm just trying to stand up for my beliefs and my needs, like what you said, but it's just always meeting maybe that brick wall, or you're just not seeing eye to eye and you just genuinely feel like you're always wrong or on the losing end of that?
I think that the mindset of, I mean, if you're married to a good person, at least, then, you know, your mindset of, number one, you're on the same team. So there isn't really a right and a wrong, win or lose. Like, you're both going to win or you're both going to lose. And if you're fighting, then you're both losing. So, sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here. But I guess the point is that, can you repeat the question?
Yeah. Sorry. So I was just saying, you know, when we would argue earlier on, you know, nobody wants to be arguing. And the only reason you're getting to that point is because you really believe in whatever it is you're arguing for. And kind of what would you say to couples when they're in that point? Because you obviously, they both really believe whatever it is they're fighting for. And, you know, not everyone's going to be kind of satisfied with maybe always being the one to, what's the word where you meet in the middle?
Compromise.
And sometimes, you know, like you said, there's no win or lose, but you do just sometimes feel, or I certainly felt, and I know Rich.
Don't you ever feel like you're being taken as right?
Kind of. Like, I just always felt in that early stage, like I was just being shut down and, you know, and I wasn't getting anywhere when I was trying to stand up for the things that I wanted. And I think Rich probably felt the same way, because I was always seeing him, you know, we were getting whatever, I don't even remember what the things we were arguing about now is, but, or were.
Just everything. I mean,
yeah, it was everything. So it was, we never really doubted that, like, we were with the right person. We never wanted to get a divorce. It wasn't anything like that, but we struggled in the sense that, like, I just felt like, am I actually crazy? Because he never seems to understand where I'm coming from, kind of thing. And I think he probably felt the same way about me. So when you're just butting heads and not getting anywhere, what would you kind of advise? I guess that's the longest question ever, but that's the last part is what it is.
No, I appreciate it. I lose my train of thought a lot.
That's okay.
So what I was trying to say was empathy can go a really long way. And just trusting that your partner has the best intentions. So mm-hmm. if you go up to them and you're like, I know you're not trying to hurt me, but can you explain to me why this is so important to you? And sometimes that's hard for my husband to answer. And I have to ask a few questions to get to the bottom of it. And he's like, just because of this. And I'm like, yes, but why? How does it make you feel if this wasn't to happen? And so to really kind of dig deep into the reasons behind why, the motivations of why somebody wants something one way or wants to do something.
Can I do this, yeah.
Yeah.
So with the why method that she's talking about, it's a popular one method that's called the five whys, whereby you ask the same question using why as the starting. Why do you want this? Why do you want that? Going through it five times. And usually when you do it on the fifth occasion, you get to the root cause of the issue. You actually be able to find out why the person is saying whatever they're saying or behaving the way they're behaving.
I didn't even know that.
So it's a nice technique to use. Like, it's called a five whys. If you Google it, you will find a lot of information about it.
So Ashley, you didn't even know that he five whyed you?
I was doing it to him.
She's doing it myself.
Oh, okay, that you were doing it to him. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And I think probably what a lot of couples would find is that they don't know why something's so important to them once you get down to it. And it's just almost early days, just standing your ground or pride or something like that. And probably doesn't really matter when you get down to it. Do you think that's what you find sometimes?
It's really like essential. Like once you're able to dig down into the root cause of it, it just like, it lights up, it gives, I don't know what the word, like, it kind of gives you like a different, you'll be like, this is what, you know, this is what's actually going on. And then that gives you guys.
Can I have an example of this?
Okay.
So we were talking about it just in parenting. My husband felt that the children were arguing with him too much. And, And I was like, it's just their age. You know, they're young. This is good that they're not just taking or no, that they want to know why they're questioning things. They're not just going to be blind sheep following directions. And it'll keep them safe in the long run. And so I asked him, like, what is it about this that really bothers you? And he was like, after a few, what is it and why, he came to, you know, to show me that it's because he wants them to grow up and live a life where they can be responsible adults and not just be entitled and spoiled and all this stuff. And I was like, okay, this makes sense. This is what you're worried about. So let's come up with a solution that can appease both of our needs in this scenario.
Did that answer the question?
Yeah, I think so. You just got to really get to the root of it, really, is why something's bothering you so much. And like I said earlier, a lot of the times I found that what we were arguing about wasn't actually the problem. It was something else that was kind of buried underneath it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add that, you know, if you have past trauma, this will definitely influence so much in your life and why things are important to you or what bothers you and things like that.
Yeah. And especially like with the way you were brought up, the way you were raised, like the way your parents or whoever raised you and how they did certain things, it kind of changes the way you think and view things. So the way I put it is, we see life through different lenses. So like you can have a lens that helps you see, let's say like this thing is expensive, this thing is cheap. And so depending on the lens that you have on, will determine how you're going to view certain things and how you're going to react to whatever you're facing. Does that make sense?
That's such an important point, actually, about the lenses. But do you guys find, with the people that you help, is there common themes about the, you know, the most common problems or arguments that people have at the beginning, that first year or, you know, the early stages?
Communication is number one. Trust comes up. But one of the other big ones is splitting up chores.
Right.
I can see why. It takes a while to figure it out.
Yeah, that is really big.
Yeah, it is. So I guess, what are your general guidelines? I mean, communication is something that we really promote. And I think, you know, because our podcast kind of has a long distance relationship slant to it, because we did meet, you know, online and we were long distance for a long time. So, you know, we had to really learn to be good at communication and, I mean, for long, long, long periods of time.
Yeah, I mean, we think there are a few benefits to long distance, but the communication is such a big benefit of it, because you have no choice but to talk. You know, you can't, we said before, you can't build that relationship on sex or, you know, being at the same place at the same time frequently. You know, it's built completely on communication. So that was a huge benefit for us.
Yeah, and it's something that we place a lot of value in and we always kind of encourage for our listeners. So I know you've kind of talked about seven steps and or like just kind of your, I guess, what's your general belief system around communication and what do you guys promote to the people that you help?
So with communication, like we followed our seven steps that has been working for. I can just read it off quickly for anybody who is listening. And yeah. I can send you a link to a downloadable PDF or...
Great, we'll put it in the show notes for people.
You know, but pretty much it's the first step is you get the attention of your spouse. And then the second step is when you're talking to them, you don't yell. You don't try to raise your voice. The third step is that you put yourself in your spouse's shoes. And this is when empathetic listening comes into play. The fourth one is that you try to confirm that whatever you said or whatever your spouse said is clearly understood. And if they have any questions, you answer their questions.
It's like saying, this is what I'm hearing you say. Is mm-hmm. that?
Yeah. And then the fifth one is that if, let's say, you've spoken to your spouse about something and they don't understand it, then you try using different communication methods. So one of the communication methods, it could be instead of just talking, you write it out. Or you can use images to try to explain whatever you're saying to your spouse. The sixth one is that you take a break if you're not making progress, and then you come back to it. And then the last one is that you just keep repeating the six steps every time you communicate with your spouse. And that has been really helpful for us, because most of the time it's, if you have any communication issue, it's either you're not paying attention or when you're talking, you are yelling. And so your spouse feels disrespected, or sometimes they just close off because they are like, you're just shouting. Because when you're talking to someone and you're shouting, they most likely won't listen to you, which means they cannot hear whatever you're saying.
And number five was really interesting to me there. So, because it reminded me of, it reminds me of something I feel like I've heard from psychologists or whatever, that, you know, you can write a letter to someone. And I feel like not taking the conversation away from verbal and communicating through writing, or you said images as well, like I feel like that's going to give you time to take a step back and really articulate what you want to say, probably in the more appropriate words than just the heat of the moment.
Yes,
absolutely. I mean, you could even share articles. There's some conversations where we have to write it down and draw, you know, diagrams and things like that, just to better understand each other. But the biggest common theme that we use in our own marriage and that we promote on our website is the empathy, because it's when you're filtering everything through that. And if both of you can do that, then that's just amazing, because you're both open-minded and ready to listen and try to understand where each other's coming from, not so much what they're saying.
Yeah, I think as Andrea touched on this slightly earlier on, that it's kind of not so much what is being said, but it's how it makes them feel.
Yes.
And I think, so it sounds like these steps are really important in preventing things from escalating. But I guess, you know, if couples are new to it, it might be kind of hard to break the patterns of where things get heated. So do you think that it's, or do you have any tips for trying to stick to those steps? Because they're all very logical, which I think people probably need. But in the heat of the moment, if you do start to get upset and defensive,
it can take time to learn the new habit.
It can take time, but people, you may not stick with them the first time. You might get to step three before things blow up and you start arguing. So is it just really persistence and keep trying to go back to it every time, or any other kind of hacks for how you can kind of keep the emotions under control so you can get through those seven steps?
I'll answer this because I'm the hothead. It was just that. It was, you know, oh my gosh, you know what? I messed up and I said this, or I rose my voice. So I need to apologize to him, because that's not what I meant. And you know what? I can see where he was coming from now that I'm calmer. So it takes a lot of apologizing. And for me, what works for me is to just shut down the conversation when I feel myself get to that point where I'm not being open-minded and it is just going to be an argument. So I separate myself and we take a break, and then we come back to it. And usually by then I've come to see things in a new light.
Yeah.
And then
for me, I think if anyone wants to implement that, just pick seven different steps, but they all tackle different communication skills. So pick the one that you think you can implement right away.
And then
implement that one, like today, right now, when you have a conversation with your partner, just implement that one and then see how that goes. And once you get good at that one, you pick another one and you keep going again. And then you get to a point whereby all of that becomes like automatic for you. And then you just use them as you're talking to your partner. So like for me, when I'm talking to Ashley, I have these at the back of my head. And so when we're talking, we're not making progress, I try to remind myself, okay, which one am I not applying right now? Which one do I need to apply? Which one is not making sense? And then I go through that, and then it helps us to do everything. And most of the time, to come back to, like, we need to take a break because this is a really heated argument.
Yeah. And you know, practice makes perfect. The more you do it, the more it's going to become second nature. And so now it's just so ingrained in how we communicate. Now we just like, wait a minute, something's not going right. What do we need to do here? What didn't we do? And recently we discovered that we weren't getting each other's attention anymore. We were just talking while one of us was working or on the phone. And then I have this really bad habit of responding, even though I'm not listening and I don't even know I'm responding. So I'll be like, uh-huh. And then I'll be, wait, what did you say?
Yeah, I think we're guilty of that too.
Yeah, totally. I think everyone probably is. It's so easy now to be distracted as well. We're always connected to some sort of device, you know, and I know there's been a number of times that I've asked you to do something and you've, yep. And then later, did you do that?
Well, it's almost always when I've just woken up and I'm not, my memory doesn't work first thing.
It's not an attack on you. Just like, it happens. Or I'll be doing some housework or something and you say, oh, can you do this? Yeah, what? I didn't even have no memory of you saying that. And I think also it's important to remember that, you know, as your relationship progresses and your life's progress, you know, you still, you know, I'm still Andrea the wife, but I'm still very much just Andrea the person. And, you know, I do get distracted by things. You know, you may be talking to me about something and maybe I'm still caught up in some stressful stuff going on at work. So I think it's really important that you, if someone's trying to get your attention, that it's okay to say, I know this is important to you and that you really want to talk about this right now, but it's not a great time for me. I'm really wrapped up in something. And can we hook up in an hour? Just give me a minute to work through something I'm working on or whatever, because I think that's fair. If you want,
you're communicating that.
Yeah. Yeah. Not just, no, not right now, I'm busy, but saying, look, I can see that this is important to you and that,
I want to give you time.
Yeah. But I'm not in the right headspace for that. Let me get through this and then we can talk about it. I think that might kind of deter some of those things. If you can recognize that you're in a distractible place and you can't focus, you owe your partner to not pretend that you're listening just to satisfy them, but to actually really give them your full attention so that you guys can clarify whatever's going on.
Absolutely. And usually what we do is for a conversation that we know is going to be heavier or a bigger conversation, we'll let each other know, hey, I really need to talk about this subject. Let me know when you're ready. And he knows that when we want to talk about finances or stuff for the business, then I need to do it within, I can't do it in the evening because my brain is fried by then. So he'll be like, I need to talk about this. Can we do it tomorrow morning? And be like, yeah, okay. I'll put that on my planner.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw you guys have cause we did a episode on money for couples quite a while back, and I know you guys have, a resource too, don't you, for the importance of budgeting?
Yeah, we had an article. It just lists out how to budget as a newly married couple, and you know, trying to decide whether you want to manage your finances or not manage your finances, and some of the tools that you can use to do that.
Yeah,
because I think it's such an important one. If, you know, talking about communication and arguing and the, sort of the first year of marriage, money. Because again, you know, I think you really summed it up when you said each family is like a culture, and that extends to how they spend and save money, and I think getting on the same page as early as possible about how your finances as a couple will be managed can solve or prevent so many communicative problems down the line.
Yes.
So I think probably got loads of information from you guys, but do you want to tell us a little bit more about kind of, you know, what you guys offer, what people can find on your website?
Because you have books and things people can buy, right?
Yeah, so feel free to plug your stuff.
And we'll include links in our show notes, so for our listeners, they can go straight to it.
Yes, thank you. We have different resources. So, like, on our website, if anybody goes there, they'll find articles to read that will help them improve their marriage or become better spouses. We focus mostly on the individual because we believe that if you work on yourself, whatever you learn, you'll be able to indirectly impact that into your spouse, and your spouse will learn from you. So if you're able to work on yourself, that will help you. So most of the articles are focused on you, the individual, and working towards improving yourself to become a better spouse. As far as resources, we have our podcast. We have, I think, about 40 episodes. We are not publishing new episodes right now, but the 40 episodes have a lot of valuable information about the first year of marriage, because we interviewed over 25 different couples to share their first year of marriage stories, the hardships they went through, the struggles, the good times, the bad times, all of that on there. And then our books, you can find them on Amazon or any of the ebook retailers. We have about 10 books out right now. They range from communication to intimacy and how to reconnect with your spouse. And some of them are activity books that you can do together. So, for example, one of our activity books is called Our Bucket List Adventures. And that one is simply an activity book whereby you create a bucket list that you want to achieve together as a couple, and then you actually go ahead and accomplish them. The other one was recently like Quizzes for Couples book, and that one has a list of quizzes that you can do together for your date nights and just use that to bond and learn more about each other.
And okay.
Everything is on our website, at peacefulfamily.com. So once you go over there, the menu bar has everything. You can just click on whatever you want. And lately we've added some quizzes that are supposed to help couples to identify certain weak points in their relationship and see how well they are doing as a couple.
Okay, that sounds fun. People love a quiz.
Yeah, I think we'll have to do those. I like a quiz. And if you ever decide to fire up the podcast again we'd love to tell you about all the interesting things that happened in our first year too. Yeah. So.
Yes, we would love to.
Cool. Well, thank you guys so much. Feel free to send anything else that you want us to include in the episode notes. And yeah, thanks so much for your time. It's been